With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Coming up
on the free-for-all, Mets, the aftermath, Jim Cherusmi, sad ride, seven train, what's next for Citi Field? Little Victories, my new book, out today. Get it, buy it, love it, share it. Also, Ben Cohen talking NBA, talking Steph Curry, and a special guest star playing a game with Jim Cherusmi. How well do you know Drake? That's next on the free-for-all.
Timely insights, funny stories, sports, culture, life. This is free-for-all from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
This is Jason Gay, and this is episode 4 of the free-for-all. Episode 4, I think, was the good Star Wars. That's where Star Wars got... Well, it didn't get good. It began at episode 4, right, Jim?
Right. So if we're counting...
And back to the prequels 1 through 3.
Right. If we're counting the way Star Wars counts, this would be episode 1, technically.
This would be... Oh, so this would be when it was unhinged.
Right.
You might hear that crying in the background... Jim, I'm not sure if you can, and that's not Citi Field. That is because I am doing this pod from home with my beautiful children in the background, Josie, who's 9 months, and my son Jesse, who's 2.5. So it's a little bit of real dad action today. So joining me in studio, Jim Cherusmi.
How you doing, Jason?
Jim, we want to talk a little bit about your weekend of sadness. And Ben Cohen, who is our basketball writer extraordinaire, among other things, for the Wall Street Journal. Ben, how are you?
Good. I was planning to cry, but I guess I can't now.
Well, you can still cry, and you and Josie and Jesse can have a little bit of a crying competition. That's fine. Jim, let's just talk about Jim's mood. Jim. I was sitting next to Jim on Sunday night when Jim's beloved New York Mets surrendered the World Series in Game 5 to the Royals. Or actually, it was... Was it, in fact, Monday by the time the series was officially surrendered? And Jim actually, he was very, very well comported. He didn't, you know, throw anything. But I don't know what the ride home was like. And what was that, your train ride home on the 7 like, Jim? And how do you feel today?
Well, I was working. I was wrapping up the live blog and some stories we had. So I took a 2 a.m. 7 train home with about 100 rowdy Royals fans waiting on the 7 platform. I was not...
That's the problem if you wait too long. If you leave the park late because of a work obligation, you're going home with the championship fans, right? So you're going home with Royals fans.
Right. So basically, I blended in because I was not wearing any Mets gear, so they weren't looking at me. And there was no Mets fans in sight. I could have been in Kansas City waiting for the 7 train, yeah. And they were chanting, "Let's go Royals," the entire ride back to Manhattan.
I mean, that must have gotten a little tedious.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The Royals don't actually have another cheer. So it's like, "Let's go Royals" doesn't even really ring. I don't know what they chant normally at games, but...
Are you sort of quietly slagging the Royals there, saying that they only have one cheer?
Perhaps. I mean, they should be a little more innovative than "Let's go Royals."
What's the Mets cheer?
"Let's go Mets."
Let's go.
But it
Mets.
Sounds a little better. The "Ets," I think, helps that.
Jim, let's just go over the key points to Game 5, to the World Series victory of the Royals. First of all, you agree or disagree with the decision Terry Collins made to bring Matt Harvey out for the 9th. He had been dominant all night. Harvey clearly wanted the ball. But sometimes, you know, emotion can get the better of any pitcher. There's no pitcher out there who's like, "Oh, no, send somebody else out." Did Collins make the right move?
He made the right move. I mean, being in the stadium, that was what we were talking about heading into the 9th inning. Everyone in the stadium wanted Harvey out there. He deserved the cheer. The Mets had a 2-run lead, but then he walked the first batter, and that's when he should have come out. And I think that's the situation that where the Mets...
It was an incredible atmosphere in the park to watch him walk out. He didn't walk. He ran. He sprinted. In fact, he maybe looked a little too amped up to go out there for the 9th. I've never... I mean, you know, Citi Field broke every sort of noise record it ever had this past month. But I had never heard the park that loud. It was incredible. And it was what the people wanted. It was what the people wanted. And, you know, I know that hindsight, of course, is perfect, but it had it gone the other way, had Collins gone to Familia and Familia coughed it up, it would have been equally as brutal, if not more.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, the Mets fans had their moment, and obviously the season ended in a very Mets-like manner. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm happy. I'm actually very happy with the season. It's not really a weekend of sadness.
Now, he gives up the walk. It was a first batter walk, and then he gives up the hit to, who was it? Was it Hosmer? Or who got the
Hosmer, yes. Doubled.
Hosmer doubled. Now, at that point, they're still winning, the Mets. The Mets are up 2-1. But I'm looking over at you, and you're already starting to, you know, mentally surrender. Are you feeling the wheels are coming? I mean, this is before the play at the plate.
Yes.
As a Mets fan, are you just sort of bracing for what you believe to be the inevitable?
It was funny because, you know, I was live blogging the game, and I'm also getting bombarded by texts from Mets fans who are basically ready to jump. They I got a series of texts being like, the game is lost right here. As soon as Harvey gave up that hit to Hosmer, the Mets were still up 2-1, but the game was over. The series was over at that point.
and you had no confidence that you would get any sort of offense from the Mets in the bottom of the inning.
No. Yeah. And, of course, they barely got a hit in extra innings. So I think the game was over at that point.
Just pointing towards, Jim, you know, I remember last year leaving Kansas City after game 7, you know, and they had a crack at the bottom of the ninth to win that game against San Francisco. Baumgartner shut them down. But Brian Costa said to me on the drive back, he said, you know what, I would not be surprised to see the Royals back. And sure enough, they were. Do you feel confident that the Mets will have a return engagement? First of all, I think they have, you know, they're going to be everyone's pick for the NL East next year. I mean, there's no doubt about that, regardless of whether or not they sign Murphy and Cespedes.
Great pitching. We'll see. I have no confidence in that. I think this is sort of lightning in a bottle. I'm not sure. They have a lot of things, a lot of question marks. Murphy and Cespedes are gone. Will the team spend money? That's a big question.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. That's time for the hot stove. Jim, I have to admit, I would never root against a team that you love. But there's a little part of me that doesn't mind the fact that there's not a game 6 tonight in Kansas City, because you know why?
Happy book day.
Today's my book day. My first book, Little Victories, is out. It's a real book. It's published by Doubleday Random House. You can actually buy this book in a bookstore, at the airport, online, Amazon, Powell's, Walmart, BarnesandNoble.com, everywhere you can get it. If you want to come by my house and scream, I'll throw a copy out the window. But I'm also having my book party, Jim. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're a fan of this incredible free-for-all tradition, please come on down to the Powerhouse Arena in Dumbo, Brooklyn tonight, 37 Main Street, for my book party, 7 to 9 p.m. Pop in, have a glass of wine.
Will there be
conflict? No conflict with the Mets. You know what? Can I just tell you what I was going to do had the Mets been in game 6?
What's that?
So the plan was I was going to have two of these kids, these teenage kids I knew, neighbors' children, and they were going to – one was going to wear a Mets uniform and one was going to wear a Royals uniform. And as the evening went on, they were going to reenact key moments in the game in the event that people were sticking at the party and they wanted to know what was happening. So we would update scores. We would, you know, reenact dramatic plays, home runs, etc., keeping everyone abreast. I should probably still do that tonight for the heck of it.
I think you should. Just pretend the Mets won game 5 and then just, you know, go on.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to do, Jim – oh, that's Josie in the background. That's not the Mets.
She's still upset.
She's still – can you hear her? She's like, I can't believe you didn't go to Familia after the walk.
Jason, are you really in the airport bookstore? Have you gone to LaGuardia to confirm that yet?
I have not gone to – I got an early report from a friend who was in the Orange County airport who did not see it there. So, you know,
that's
heads
how you
are
know
roll.
You've made it when you're in the airport bookstore.
The bookstore is prime book buying real estate, and I've been told by the publisher that, you know, airport copies are on the way. And that's exciting to me because, you know, I do a lot of my best reading on airplanes.
Life-size cardboard cutouts.
Life-size cardboard cutout. Okay, so not to give another surprise away that was going to happen. So I also had this idea, Jim, that for the party, you know who would be been a fun guest to have at the party?
Who's that?
You know, given everything that's been going on in New York, I wanted to rent somebody for the night. And I don't mean that in some sort of untoward way, but I mean in a family-friendly, I wanted to rent someone's time for the night. Who do you think that would have been? Mr. Met, that's right. Mr. Met. And they actually got a hold of the Mr. Met line, and I called the Mr. Met line, explained who I was, what was going on, the book party, how I felt that fans of the Journal, fans of the Mets would love seeing Mr. Met there. Never got a call back.
What about Mrs. Met?
I did not inquire about Mrs. Met. I imagine she's comforting Mr. Met, so she's also preoccupied, but no Mr. Met. Well, unless I got a last-second call, Mr. Met is not going to
Well,
be
it's
there.
Interesting because before Game 5, I was standing on the field talking to a few unnamed baseball writers, and they were all rooting for Kansas City because none of them want – they were ready for the season to end, and they all take a break kind of in after the season. So I feel like maybe Mr. Met was maybe secretly rooting for Kansas City
no.
so he can go on vacation.
First of all, you know, Kansas City is a great place to go for baseball. You know, I feel the one unfortunate side aspect of this series was the fact that the New York just sucks so much oxygen out of any athletic event. And so Mets fans made it all about themselves. And yet the Royals are a better story than the Mets winning a World Series could have ever have been.
Plus, I heard from our colleague Kevin Hellicker, they are closing schools today to celebrate the Royals win.
As this should be, as it should be. Isn't it weird how they close schools to celebrate, you know, the teams, that, and yet they put the games on at, you know, 9 o'clock at night. I want to talk to Ben for one quick second before we move on to our next topic, which is, of course, me. But Ben, what were you watching on Sunday night? Because you're a man of many sports disciplines, so I imagine you weren't completely riveted to the World Series.
In fact, I did watch the World Series. I can't say I watched the entirety of every game of the World Series. In fact, during game one of the World Series, I missed probably a couple of the innings in extra innings because I was watching the Golden State Warriors ring ceremony. but I did watch on Sunday night. There wasn't really anything else going on. And I figured to watch like the Great British Baking Show on Netflix instead of extra innings of game five of the World Series.
I love this Mets fan sound effect we have in the background. Isn't that amazing? Can you hear it, JoJo?
That's how I felt around 12:30 a.m. when I still wasn't sleeping and was just watching the inevitable Mets collapse.
Jim, you know, you mentioned your train trip home. I've never gotten out of Citi Field faster than I did on Sunday night. I swear to you. Many, many times. And I'm including the U.S. Open in that. I was like, it was like, bam, on the Grand Parkway, I was out of there. It was amazing, amazing. People fled Citi Field.
That's interesting. So, because basically, the Mets fans were already gone by the time you got to the park.
They were gone. You know, by the time the Royals were, you know, into their trophy presentation, every Mets fan had, you know, they were long down the highway.
It's also interesting that they don't do the trophy presentation on the field when it's in the visiting ballpark. They do it inside. So there was no on-field.
But I hate the on-field trophy presentations. I feel like what they've done is they've sort of sanitized the event by doing that. I always liked the sort of rowdy, undisciplined, semi-drunken. I remember a couple years ago, Red Sox won the World Series. And, of course, they had their celebration at Fenway Park on the field. This was the first time they'd clinched at Fenway Park. Since, you know, the electricity was invented. And the great thing about these locker room celebrations, except in rare instances where you have these modern ballparks like Yankee Stadium, it looks like, you know, the Delta Sky Lounge. You know, Fenway Park's a huge dump. Like, the locker room is a dump. It looks like a place where you detain people for, you know, several hours at the airport. It does not look like some sort of luxury hangout. You know, there's just such a grody quality to it. And I feel like the on-field presentation has sort of sucked the life out of that.
Are there bookstores in that locker room, though?
Yeah, there are other bookstores. You know, Jim, you mentioned to me, because you asked where was the champagne on Sunday night. in the ninth inning.
I did.
They only had champagne for one. I mean, there was no Mets champagne possibility. So they only had stocked whatever they had stocked for the Royals.
So that's my question.
And they probably didn't even have Mets. They didn't need Mets shirts on hand.
Right. So it was interesting because notice I asked you in the ninth inning when the game was still undecided where the champagne was. But yeah. I wonder if the Mets bought the champagne. Are the Mets expected to buy the champagne for the Royals? Does Major League Baseball?
No, I think that's on MLB to buy. But, you know, there's the famous story, which is recounted in Ken Burns' baseball documentary by Bob Costas, of the scene in the Red Sox locker room in 1986, where MLB had gone in and secured all of the, put the plastic coatings over all the lockers and put all the champagne in there, set up the complete party. And Bob Costas, who was, I can't remember who was broadcasting, it must have been NBC, was broadcasting the World Series, was there on scene to do the trophy presentation. And then, of course, all hell breaks loose out on the field. And they immediately start stripping down the plastic and scurrying it across the other way. Not into the Mets locker room, but just getting it the hell out of there because the Red Sox had lost.
Right. I wonder how much one of those Red Sox 1986 World Series champion T-shirts would be worth on eBay right now.
But did they double print in those days in the way that they do now? I feel now it's almost like a gimmick that they make so much of the gear and it's like a laugh and they say, oh, look at, the Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl champion T-shirts from last year. I feel like that was less of a thing.
Yeah, they definitely got T-shirts, though, I think, right?
Yeah. Speaking of less of a thing or more of a thing, this is just a random question, but I was watching a little bit of the beginning of Monday Night Football last night, and is it more of a thing now that we're watching football players warm up before football games? I feel like no one cared about it. It's very boring to watch football players warm up. They're just kind of like going back and forth on the field and throwing the football. It's not exciting to watch them practice. I would say it's a lot less exciting than watching, like, say, NBA players like take three-pointers. But now we're watching like Cam Newton, warm up for 45 minutes before a game. Is this a thing? Is this just football obsessiveness?
Pre-game shows last a lot longer. I remember, back in the NFL Today days, Brent Musburger would go through all the games before, you're looking live at Lambeau Field, and then they would go through like the series of games that they were going to televise.
But they would show like 2 seconds of like that kind of footage. Now, you know what I think the thing is? I think it's the Odell Beckham effect. I feel like Odell Beckham's pregame warm-ups have now become a thing. And so players are actually conscious of the fact that their warm-ups can potentially become things.
That's not – I mean, Ben, are you a fan of looking at players warming up?
In the NFL?
Or NBA?
I like watching the NBA warm-ups. Like, Steph Curry's warm-up is incredible, too. He does that thing where he bounces eight balls at once or something and then, makes 53s in a row. And then Curry, actually, before he leaves the court after his warm-up, he takes a shot from the tunnel, like, by the Golden State bench, which is probably a 40-footer, and he makes him like 60% of the time. It's incredible.
Does
and
he have to make it to walk away?
He takes a couple of them. If he misses like three, he'll just stop. But during the finals last year, the arena was basically full during his warm-ups, and you would just there was this crowd of like 400 people by the tunnel just taking cell phone shots of him trying to make the tunnel shot. It was like a thing. It was like he would do it like 25 minutes before the game, and you almost had to be on the court for that just to watch him take the tunnel shot.
I like watching him too, and the two things that I would recommend, one is like watch Durant warm up. And I sound like my dad while I'm saying this, but the thing that struck me about watching Durant was that how he doesn't take long distance shots. He works his way back from, little bunny shots to, 8-footers to 10-footers, 12-footers. And it's not until the very end of the routine that he's taking anything that's close to a 3-pointer. And the other thing that is striking when you watch NBA players warm up is how the guys you think are terrible shooters in warm-ups are the greatest shooters you've ever seen. If you saw just a pedestrian NBA player show up at a gym or show up on your court to play and just warm up for 5 minutes, you would say to yourself, that is the most sublime athletic accomplishment I've ever seen in my entire life. It's staggering. Just the worst NBA shooters – how just what it just goes to show that, you know, everyone's a shooter in the NBA until you have a hand in your face.
It's definitely true. I mean, you know, all these guys like, you know, Nick Collison, great college player. I mean, he's essentially just viewed as a bench player in the NBA for Oklahoma. But, I mean, he's a star.
Ben, I wanted to ask you, you know, we're going to take a quick break in a moment too before we go on to our next thing. But I wanted to ask you about basketball because basketball is back. Basketball is back, started last week. Season is underway, and you are in full thrall, of course, because the Warriors look, you know, finals ready right out of the gate. They don't even have their coach. When are they getting Steve Kerr back? When's Steve Kerr returning from his back surgery?
I don't think he's rushing back now, though.
Yeah, maybe the Steve Kerr effect was inflated a little bit here. But I have a question to you. You know, I follow the game. Honestly, I follow basketball more closely on social media than I do in actual television watching because social media has become so good at connecting you to the game and showing you the things that you need to see. I mean, I must have seen the Porzingis dunk last night 750 times on Twitter and Facebook. Same with Steph Curry highlights, same with things that Russ Westbrook is doing, same with things that LeBron James is doing. But I wonder, is there really mania for early season basketball, or is it sort of this, you know, reality distortion field? Because again, it is such a social media savvy sport, you know, with the tweets and vines and so on, and you're just able to connect to it in a way that I think you can't connect to any other game like.
So I think it's fun now. I think it gets a little boring during the like the grind of the regular season when you get around the Super Bowl and then during the NCAA tournament, and then it picks up again for the stretch run in the playoffs. But it's exciting now because you've been waiting to watch Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook and all of these just incredibly dynamic stars that are so much fun to watch for a few months now. And they come back and they not only do what they have been doing and what you expect them to do, but they're actually doing it even better. Like, there's an argument to be made that Steph Curry and the Warriors are better this year than they were last year when they were a historically great team. And, like, you see Russell Westbrook on Friday night makes a 40-foot buzzer-beating three-pointer to force overtime, and then the Thunder beat
the buzzer Magic. Beat a buzzer.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible.
I mean,
it's like
it's
the type of thing that when you think about, like, oh, what will Russell Westbrook do next? Like, banking in a 40-footer buzzer beater is like the type of thing that you imagine. And then he goes out and does it in the second or third game of the year. So I think that's true. I think there's also like – I don't think anyone is going gaga for, you know, Raptors versus Bucks on
Nets,
a Tuesday
Bucks,
night. Yeah, exactly. But like when the Warriors are on, you want to watch them. And when Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant are in the fourth quarter of a close game, you want to watch that. Like, you can pick your spots with the NBA, and there's almost always something that you're going to want to watch on League Pass or TNT or, you know, Vine or something.
What
like,
is
something
League
is
Pass
always
cost?
Happening.
What do you pay for League Pass per month?
I think it's like $150 for the year.
Okay. And do you feel that that's $150 well spent for a sports fan?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you're not in one of those markets, like if you're in the Bay Area or Oklahoma City, you know, you already have access to those teams. But if you're in New York, you're stuck with the Nets and the Knicks, and you might want to watch another team instead.
But there's enough national telecast of games. Like, for instance, there's NBA TV telecast tonight. You can catch two games. They're not the greatest games.
But like, so last night, for example, I was on a train back from Philadelphia late at night, and I was looking at my phone, and the Blazers and Timberwolves were in a two-point game with 1 minute left. So I just went on my phone and watched on League Pass the last 30 seconds of this game. And like, that's an incredible thing when you're on a train from Philadelphia to New York and it's 11:30 at night and you're watching a clear picture on your phone of a game in Minnesota, like just because you want to. Like, I can't, it's almost unbelievable that we live in that world now.
It is. All right, Ben, what are your top five, or not top five, top three drop everything basketball sites to see? So if you're a fan, you're flipping channels and you come across X. So I guess the Warriors are one.
Well, the Warriors are one, and really, like, the site to see is like, if you see some tweet that's like Steph Curry's getting hot, like drop your everything. Baby and like go rush to a TV or something. I mean, there's really like an app to be made that like alerts you only when Steph Curry is doing something insane.
Yeah.
Like there is real money to be made there. I think the Thunder in a close game is interesting. Yeah.
Give me one East team and not the Cavs.
Silence.
I don't know.
Yeah, the, I was like, the phone cut
in
out?
Some ways, in some ways, it's like if the zinger does something, like if Porzingis throws back a one-handed dunk, like that's kind of interesting. Like that's more interesting than like what the Raptors are doing on, you know, a Wednesday night or something. I mean, I get there are interesting stories.
Like, I feel like Porzingis is just this incredibly hilarious internet stock right now, which no one really knows what the valuation is, but it's just seesawing every day back and forth in this really sort of crazy, bubbly way. And, you know, have you seen enough, Ben, to get any sort of rendering as to his NBA potential?
No, I have no idea. I don't think anyone has any idea. Like, he looks good, and he's like, we've been saying for months that he is like a real NBA player. But like, the guy's name is the Zinger. He's so much fun to just like talk about and like, you know, just watch what's going to happen. Like, this is a team that no one really expects anything out of. And if the Zinger is throwing down dunks over LaMarcus Aldridge, like, that's probably as good as you're going to get if you're a Knicks fan this year.
The thing that I think people have reacted to at Porzingis is, if we're being completely candid, the expectation or the fear with a guy named Porzingis, who, let's face it, most Knicks fans did not know prior to the draft. Wait a second. The 12 Days of Christmas is playing on the cat piano. None of that... That statement is untrue. You know, most Knicks fans didn't know the first thing about Porzingis. And the fear, am I right, Ben? The fear is that he would get on the court and he would look like he had just picked up a basketball for the first time yesterday.
Yes.
And that is anything but the case, that there's a basketball IQ there. Clearly there is some game, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it. He's got just a flow to him, which is a little unexpected for a gawky guy from Latvia, perhaps.
Right. And he's a little bit polished, too, which you don't expect out of a 7-foot European. But he was playing in a real league in Spain for a real team, and like, people who saw him, like, this wasn't unexpected. It's not like the Knicks like found this guy on the side of the street in Barcelona and were like, come on down, we play in this fishing village known as New York, you're gonna be great with the Knicks. Like, he's a real prospect, so it's not too surprising. But there was that fear that like he just would be awful, that he would never have seen a basketball in his life. And I think
on top of that, he was going to a city that is just, you know, we eat our own here and we would be ruthless about it and he would not be equipped to handle it. And yet, quite the contrary, he's been spectacular in his public appearances and his interviews and so on. He's been really, really charming, self-deprecating, funny, wise. You know, he said everything correctly. I mean, he could give half the league media management lessons in terms of just the way he's handled this. He, you know, got it immediately that he was not New York's first choice. You know, he heard the boos on draft night and he responded to it perfectly.
Well, I think every Knicks fan is fearful of two words, Frederick Weiss, right?
Right. Well, I think that fear lingers, you know, but that it's an unfair comparison at this point. I'm pretty comfortable saying that now.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that he's a lot more athletic and, you know, he's younger and he's proven that he's got some offensive skills as well.
All right. Well, we got to wrap this segment up and we're going to come right back with something very exciting and a special guest star. We're going to play a game coming up next on the Free For All.
They're here. All new podcasts from the Wall Street Journal, including
What's News? Top stories without the noise.
Where does the presidential campaign go from here? Check back for daily updates from the Wall Street Journal.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Now, timely insights, funny stories, sports, culture, life. This is Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Here's Jason Gay.
So we're going to play a little game here on the Free For All. The other night when I was at the Mets with Jim Cherusmi, Jim made a startling confession in November 2015. He doesn't really get Drake, the big pop star, hip hop star. And the reason it came up was, you know, a good number of baseball players have it as their walk-up music, have a Drake cut or two. And the whole Drake phenomenon is lost on our Jim Trusmian. And Jim is not a 65-year-old man. You know, he's a young guy. And so we needed to bring on an expert, and that's Ben Cohen. But I want to do a little bit of a game before we get to the education of Jim Trusmian on Drake. We're going to play a game called What Do You Know About Drake? And we're going to pit Jim against a special guest. Jim, are you ready?
I am ready.
Do you want to know who the special guest is?
I am ready.
Who's the Ben, special guest? Why don't you tell him who the special guest is?
My mom.
and who is your mom, Ben?
Is she here?
Is she on the line?
Hi.
I think I'm going to be embarrassed.
Oh, Mrs. Cohen, we are not here to embarrass you. We're only here to embarrass ourselves. This is Jason Gay. How are you today?
I'm so happy to speak to you, and congratulations on your book. I'm going to download it on my Kindle so I can read it when I go on my plane on Friday.
Where are you going on the trip?
I'm going to Amsterdam. I've never been. And then on a little river cruise.
You're
going to
go on a river cruise. Now, you know what they have in Amsterdam, right?
I heard what they have in Amsterdam, but I don't
do
that anymore.
Are you going to partake?
Anymore?
Yeah, I don't do it. Years ago, I will not partake. Except that some... No, I'm not...
It's perfectly legal. There's nothing wrong with it. And a lot of people do it.
I'll let you know.
Okay. You can call us from Amsterdam if you get jammed up, too.
I read the excerpt on the front page on Saturday, so that was very exciting.
Thank you. Well,
but I still think Ben is out to embarrass me.
I promise. The only person we're trying to embarrass here is Jim Trusmian, not you, Mrs. Cohen.
Okay.
I pledge that to you.
I think you're going to win. I have my money on you.
Yeah. All right. So the way it's going to work is we're going to ask six questions about Drake. I'm going to ask the questions of Jim. And Ben is going to ask the questions of you, so you can keep it in the family. And in no way has this game been rigged. I'll start with you, Jim.
Okay.
Jim, Drake, before he became Drake, the hip-hop star, was an actor, or I guess he still is an actor. And what was the show that Drake first made his name on?
See, I know this one. I know three things about Drake, and this is one of them. He was on a Canadian show called Degrassi.
That's right. Okay, so Jim, who's got 1 point? Okay, so
that's a little victory for me.
I'm in big trouble.
Okay, Mom. Let's
go. You're up next.
Okay.
So Drake is known for a lot of things, but one of the things he's known for is his religion. What religion is he?
He's Jewish.
1 point for Mom. We're tied up. 1-1.
That's a lot.
I think that's it for me, though. I think we'll hang up.
1-1. Okay.
Okay, I'm ready.
Jim, my question is for Jim. Okay, Jim. Drake is a ladies' man. I don't know if you know this. He's quite the ladies' man.
I saw him at the U.S. Open this year.
He's been linked to a number of famous women over the years. I'm going to give you three names, and which is the name that Drake is not? Has not been linked to. Okay. The first name is tennis superstar Serena Williams. The second is pop music superstar Rihanna. And the third is Journal basketball correspondent Ben Cohen.
Well, I saw him at the U.S. Open at a Serena Williams match, and I heard Ben talking about an incident that he had at a club with Rihanna's ex. So I'm guessing it's Ben.
You are correct. It is Ben. And so you're up 2-1. So, Ben.
That was too easy.
Okay. So you feel that
I
one was rigged.
To
okay.
That
well, you can file a protest.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Is it my question now?
Your question for your mom.
So you stole one of my questions, then. Which I was going to ask about.
Well, you can give it to you. Just rephrase it.
Okay. Well, no, I'm going to ask another one. Mom, what animal most appears on Drake's merchandise? And I'll give you three choices, okay?
Okay.
It's the first is a dog, the second is a cat, and the third is an owl.
I would say a cat.
It's an owl.
Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's an owl.
Ben, did I know that?
You know,
Ben,
I had no idea. I would have lost that question.
I just thought because you live with a cat, that's why.
I know, but But dog and cat is pretty easy. Like, I think that maybe process of elimination, you should have gone with owl instead.
You know, well, Ms. Cohen was right. Jim's question was too easy. It was just a gag question. So I'm going to ask him a different second question, if you don't mind. Jim, just tell me, what is Drake's real first name? Or his given first name, because it is, in fact, a middle name.
No idea. Drake?
Do you want to try to steal here, Mrs. Cohen?
I have no idea. Sorry.
Aubrey. Aubrey Drake.
I never would have guessed that.
Graham.
I
okay. So I believe we now have a 1-1 tie still.
Yeah, I lose a point for getting that wrong.
Going to last and final round. Okay, Jim, we're going to fill in a lyric here, okay? A famous Drake song. Started from the bottom, now we're blank.
At the top?
No.
I think that's a good guess.
It is not at the top. Oh. Mrs. Cohen, do you want to try to steal? Started from the bottom, now we're blank?
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
What's the answer?
Ben, what's the answer?
Here.
What's the answer?
Okay. Here. Mrs. Cohen, the bottom of the ninth, the table is set here. You know, base is loaded, nobody out. All you have to do, it's just a layup, you know, to mix all the metaphors.
How about this? I will ask the final question.
And okay. I like that idea.
Name one Drake song.
I can't. I just know what he looks like.
Oh, what does he
I'm
look
sorry,
like?
I'm sorry, I failed. I'm sorry I failed in this.
All right,
I would have
all right. No. You haven't failed. There's a bonus question. I want you to rank your three favorite Billy Joel songs.
Just the Way You Are.
That's number three or one?
I like that. Make it number one.
Okay. Number two?
The Italian restaurant I like.
Oh, Scenes from Italian Restaurant is brilliant. I love that song.
Okay, and I love the New York song about New York.
That's actually that's the name of it, the New York song about New York.
What's the name of it?
New York State of Mind.
New York State of Mind.
Yep, those are my three. How's that?
You win. So Mrs. Cohen, you know what you win? You win a signed copy of Little Victories. The problem is it's going to be signed by Jim Cherusmi. But it's still a copy of the actual book.
Oh, I'm so happy. Thank you.
Enjoy having you on our air. Have a good time in Amsterdam.
Happy
again,
birthday.
If you get jammed up, ask for Interpol, but also ask for us.
Okay, thank you.
And, you know, stay out of trouble.
Thank you for playing against me, Mrs. Cohen.
Ben, are you in trouble?
Probably.
Ben, are you in trouble?
I was going to say happy anniversary and happy birthday.
Oh my goodness.
You.
I forgot completely. Happy birthday.
Okay. Today's anniversary and tomorrow's birthday. Never have one. Never do that. Tell everybody not to do that because you only get one gift.
Oh, is that true? What is Benjamin getting you?
No, I saw him Sunday night. I got nothing.
But you're getting a gift from Jason.
Ben, what are you planning to get? Are you getting something, or is this a good reminder for you?
I gave her a spot on a podcast to play a game about Drake.
That's true.
Yeah, it is the little things, isn't it? Well, thank you very much for being part of our show, and we'll have you back anytime on the Free for All.
Okay,
just lastly, Benjamin, since we're here, and Jim, you know, you just watch everything. Let's talk a little bit about the end of that Miami Duke football game and why some people are really whipped up about it and some people think it's the greatest thing that ever happened. Just to backtrack, for those of you who have not seen it, and, you know, at this point, if you're this deep into the podcast, is it at all possible you did not see the end of that football game? But Duke's winning the game. They're kicking off. It's the, you know, perfunctory play at the end of the game that no one expects anything to happen. And yet Miami does the thing that everyone tries to do and never actually works. They lateral it 700 times back and forth around the field. They do all this kind of razzle dazzle. And lo and behold, a player gets it, runs up the sideline, and scores what looks like the game-winning touchdown. And is, in fact, declared the game-winning touchdown. But subsequent review showed a myriad of penalties that could have been called on Miami, including several illegal blocks and also putting a knee to the ground. Even after an official's review, they did not overturn it. Ben, that's your Duke Blue Devil team. Were you upset?
I was like sort of upset.
Had they been undefeated, would you have been really upset?
No, because like I like them, but you never expect like they're not going to win a national championship.
But
right?
They were so, ranked.
Like, they were ranked. I actually turned the game off. I was watching on my phone and saw them score and was like, okay, I can go back to this bar now and don't have to be a crazy person outside the bar watching a Duke football game on my phone at 11 p.m. on Halloween. And
but
all of a sudden,
you saw all these crazy people on Twitter go nuts. Right?
I got like five texts, and I almost thought it was a joke. So then I tried to turn the game back on. I ended up doing what you know, what is probably the worst thing to do, which is I called the Journal contributor Andrew Beaton, who was watching the game, and had him explain to me what was going on, and had him stay on the phone during the 10-minute review. In which I was like begging for information, and he was like, they're not saying anything. And then at one point he was like, well, the ref just came out and said that they're still reviewing it. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, they can't do that. And it turns out that that's exactly what they did.
So shout out goes to Beaton.
Was Beaton actually watching the game, like, next to the Duke sideline or, like, under the hood with the referees? Because he is a Zelig who just sort of shows up and amazing places.
Well, shout out to Beaton, because I was in a hotel room in Kentucky. I was there for the Breeders' Cup. And I found out about the play from a text message from Andrew Beaton saying, wherever you are, try to find the Duke-Miami game because the craziest ending just happened. And this is a season in college football with crazy endings already. I mean, the Michigan game, the Florida State-Georgia Tech game. This might top it all, right?
So, Jason, what's your position on this? Because I think I disagree with it.
So you want to know what my position is, or you just
I want you to elaborate on it.
That actually, what you described is the thesis of ESPN First Take. You know, whatever your position is what I will disagree with. Well, what I said on the Twitter bot after, you know, the referees were suspended was that I just thought it was this strangely severe penalty that sends this strange message, which is that, you know, is a certain degree of professional responsibility necessary among referees of a college football game, especially Division I college football game? Important? Yes. You know, are they paid? Yes. You know, are they expected to conduct themselves professionally? Yes. But will mistakes happen? Of course. And it just seemed strange and punitive and spoke volumes to what I think is just the insane atmosphere around college sport, in which you know, people are so free to talk out of both sides of their mouths. They don't think that it should be changed, you know, and professionalized and let players pay and stuff like that, but yet they want heads to roll and officials to lose jobs when they make a mistake. And I just find that sort of hypocritical. And also, I think that there is a trickle down thing. I think there is something to be said for, you know, we're punishing referees. We're making it all about them. Like, they cost the game. You know, forget about the fact that 60 other minutes of football have been played. Forget about the fact that there have been penalties not called on Duke all game as well. You know, you make it all about the referees, and there's a trickle down effect on youth sport and all these other places where you see parents tackling each other outside of hockey arenas and so on. You know, I don't think those things happen in a volume, in a vacuum, and I do feel that there is an impact. I have, you know, once you get to the professional level, once you get to the NFL, people can go as nuts as they want because that is a fully industrialized profession. And I'm not saying that college football is not, but I don't feel that you can sort of create this climate. I feel like there's people who want to talk about college football as being this, you know, somewhat benign environment still. And you can't have it both ways. You can't say that it's, you know, this multi-billion dollar television industry and say it's this, like, polite civil place as well. And by the same token, you can't say that it's this polite civil place and then, you know, sack referees.
You know, I was thinking about referees. I sort of like that in baseball, the umpires actually argue back. Whereas in some of the other sports, you know, the referees get yelled at by the coaches and they kind of just take it all in. And if they make a right call or a wrong call, they basically just get yelled at. But in baseball, the umpires are actually argue back, which I kind of like. I find endearing. And, you know, we're talking about the NBA. I kind of like Joey Crawford. I'm happy that I actually can name an NBA referee and his name is Joey Crawford. I'm kind of a fan of referees.
Too bad we didn't know. How much do you know about Joey Crawford? You would have won that one. Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much for being part of the free-for-all. This has been a little bit of an experiment today, working remotely. I want to say thank you to my guests, Josie and Jesse, who made a little bit of a wreck in the background, but I love them very much. Jim Cherusmi, here as always. Ben Cohen, piping in about Drake, NBA, and other matters. Mrs. Cohen, off to Amsterdam, maybe never to return. And Little Victories on bookstores, websites, fabulous stores everywhere. Thank you for your support. This is the free-for-all.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.